Well, my name is Zach Thompson. I'm a pastor here at Calvary, but I might not look tremendously familiar to you because I'm typically at our Thornton campus. But one of the things that we've been doing across all three of our campuses is using part of our summer to look at the book of Proverbs. This is such an incredible book that helps us to navigate so much of the complexity of life, that gives practical instruction of how we are to live a life of following after God. But one of the things that we've been quick to say, at least in kicking off the series, was to issue a bit of a warning with the book of Proverbs, that Proverbs contains principles, not promises, that the wisdom and understanding that we gain from this incredible book does not guarantee that life will always work out in the way that wisdom ought to. Instead, there is an additional book of the wisdom literature that I think works in parallel with the book of Proverbs, and that's the book of Ecclesiastes. My summary of the book of Ecclesiastes, at least for the purposes of this series, is Ecclesiastes shows us how do we live when wisdom fails. So much of the book of Proverbs shows us how things tend to work out, how this guidance and instruction from God typically produces. But you notice I'm hedging my bets with some of that in the language. It doesn't always guarantee that life will work out in the way that wisdom ought to. It's why so many people could say, man, I've done everything right. So why have things not worked out right? I've gained all this wisdom. So why is that not translated to more happiness? God shows me the way to live. But why do I keep confronting difficulty as I do so? The author of the book of Ecclesiastes looks at all that's in this world, all that wisdom ought to produce, all that ought to be good, all that ought to be what a life of following God looks like, and so much of it, he says, through this repeated word throughout the book, is vanity, is meaninglessness, is trying to grasp at smoke, but it just slips through your hands. This is how the book starts in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. It says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes, a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. We skip down to verse 8. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. All right, maybe we're starting to pick up on why Ecclesiastes doesn't tend to be on our list of favorite books to read. Maybe at least if we compare it to Proverbs or Psalms or some of the other wisdom literature. Because if we're going through times that are pretty good, if we're not having too many difficulties going on in our life, when we read a passage like this, well, the response tends to be, man, lighten up, buddy. When things are going well for us, the truth of Ecclesiastes is difficult to grasp. But for those who are going through difficulty, for those who have seen the limits of wisdom, for those who've seen that life does not always produce guarantees and results, well, that's when this book is such an encouragement. Maybe this comes at times that we're going through some sort of hardship, or we've seen the frailty of life, or we're starting to ask questions of, are God's ways truly good for us? Well, that's when we need this book. That's when we need the words of this preacher. But I would suggest that it's not just in times of difficulty that this book is so important to us. Ecclesiastes is so unlike any other book of the Bible. And its unique instruction is so helpful for us, not just when we face difficulty, but especially when we're doing a series like this. As we're learning all this wisdom, all this insight, all this understanding, alongside of it, we need a book like Ecclesiastes and says, but don't miss what's real. Don't miss what this world is truly like. Don't miss reality in the midst of it. And that is what this book gives to us. I mean, think of the different topics that we've been going over in this series thus far. We've looked at wisdom for work, seeing that work is this good thing that God has for us to do, that we are to live in this life with some sort of work. Work existed before sin entered the world, and God has work as still part of his plans. So how do we navigate that well? We've gained all this wisdom for it. But why then is work so difficult? If this is something God has, why does it not seem to be as fulfilling as it ought to be? Or even, why is work hard to find at times? Maybe our language sounds like that of the preacher in verse 3. What does a man gain by all the toil? We've looked at wisdom for money, for navigating our resources well, recognizing that they're not intrinsically bad, but we want to steward them well. There's wisdom and guidance for how we do that. But then why is it never fully satisfied? Why is there not seem like there's enough? Or navigating pleasures in general. These things that feel good, but why then are they so fleeting? Ecclesiastes chapter 2, the preacher looks out at all that he has, and he has more than seemingly most. He has everything that anyone could have asked for in this life, power and influence and money. He has all the wisdom of the world, all that seems so good in this world, and he says it all amounts to vanity. Why doesn't it last if it's so good, if God gives it? We looked at wisdom for boundaries, realizing that the limits that God places on our life are not there for our detriment, but provide so much goodness within it. But then later on in that same chapter, in chapter 2, the preacher looks and says, well, if those who follow God's wisdom and those who don't end up in the same place, receive the same fate, what then is the point of all the wisdom? If we can't prolong or improve our lives by following God's ways, what are we even doing? We talk about wisdom for navigating all these different relationships, that we're made to be with other people, we're made to have life with one another. But then chapter 4, the preacher looks and says, why are so many people lonely? Why are relationships so hard? Why don't they seem to sate the cravings that we so desperately need? See, the role of the author of the book of Ecclesiastes is looking at all this world has to offer. And that's this repeated phrase throughout. I saw, I saw, I saw. Everything under the sun, everything that's on this planet, everything that he could see and touch and experience and strive after, all that seems so good, and he says it amounts to nothing. It's vanity. None of it works out. Instead of wisdom and goodness and righteousness always working in the way that it should, the preacher just saw vanity. This is Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11. He says, again, I saw that under the sun, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all. My fears of this turning into a bit of a bummer sermon seem to be coming to fruition. That would be the case if that was all that Ecclesiastes gave us. Wisdom will fail, and there's nothing you can do about it. But that's not the teaching of this book. That's not the conclusion of the preacher. Instead, what the preacher says over and over again, as he says, I saw what it was under the sun. I saw what this world has to offer. I saw what there was. Everything under the sun seemed to fail. What that shows us is that if there is nothing under the sun that gives meaning, then we need to find something over it. This interpretive key that's dripped all throughout the letter, we see most clearly in the last chapter or two, but it's given to us fairly early on. It's given to us right towards the beginning so that we would see this book through this lens, that we need something more than what this preacher sees. We need something more than what this preacher can find. We need to look beyond it. In chapter 3, after quoting the band The Birds, the author of this book shows us this. So turn with me to Ecclesiastes 3, 9 through 15. It says, what gain has the worker from his toil? I've seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He's made everything beautiful in its time. And he also put eternity in man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to end. This longing for something more than this world, but God's not fully exhaustible in that. I perceive that there's nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in his toil. This is God's gift to man. See, the author returns to that question that he posed right at the beginning. What does a man gain from all the toil? What's the point of all this striving? What does all this work seem to produce? If nothing under the sun produces meaning, if it doesn't bring fulfillment, if wisdom seems to fail, then what are we even doing? Well, it's to look for this one who is not under the sun. To see that God has given us work, to see that God has made things beautiful, that God has put something that longs for more than this world could offer in the hearts of every single person, that God gives us joy. He gives us a desire to do good, to find pleasure in this world because, he says at the very end of that passage, it is a gift. See, I think if we could ever wrap our minds around that idea, it would radically change how we experience this world. because it takes us from the vanity of trying to use these things that are good, these things that we're talking about throughout the series, work and marriage and relationships and friendships and money and all these different things that we're talking about that are good things in our life, but so often we can strive after them alone. We can make them our ultimate thing, and when we try to make this what our life is worth living for, we just find it crumbles, and then we say, well, now what? If this didn't work out, if this is what I put my hopes in, if this wasn't it, what am I to do? The preacher shows us to move away from the vanity of using the things of this world to satisfy and instead see the God who is our satisfaction. Hey, let me show this by going once again through these different topics of this series. So, wisdom for work. When we recognize that work is a gift from God, that it's something that he gives to us, we recognize then it's not the end of who we are. It's not our entire identity wrapped behind it to where if we lose our job or if it changes, we go, I don't even know who I am anymore. That's not the purpose of what work is. But when we recognize God gave us this work as a gift, we see that it's not the striving after it. It's not all of who we are wrapped up inside of it, but it's a place where God is shouting out to us that you have a purpose. You have something meaningful to do. I have given you something so that you are impacting this world around us. Yes, work in a broken world will never be as easy as it ought to be. It will never bring the fulfillment that we're looking for it to do. But when we see that work is a gift, it keeps us from ripping our hair out at the meaninglessness that work can be sometimes, and instead see it's where God imparts meaning in his people. We looked at wisdom for satisfaction and specifically through money and how there's never enough. We never hit a level of satisfaction where I finally arrived. There's always this, well, what about a little bit more? What if there's just a little bit more or a lot of it more? What if I just keep going and going and going? And it turns into this life that's all about acquiring and getting more. And instead, the preacher shows us if we recognize that this is a gift, we see our life is not a mechanism to just accrue more, but instead to use what has been given to us in a way where we delight in the one who has given it. Or for pleasure, so often life can feel like, man, that felt so good, but now it's gone. I gotta get the next thing, and the next thing. And it just never seems to last as long anymore. But instead to recognize God is the one who's put us in this place in part for our delight. He made the world good, not just for aesthetic purposes, but so that you would find joy in the midst of it. But if that's all that we're striving after, it's never gonna last. Instead, in the good that we have, in the good meals, and the good company, to see God gave this to me, and to delight in him in the midst of it. For the relationships that never seem to fully satisfy, that take hard work, that don't line up with the picture that we had for them, as marriages become so difficult, as friendships get lost, well, it's to recognize that those in themselves are gifts as well. And if we see, God gave me this relationship, well, we can get to a place where we recognize that the toil, the work that it requires, is all the more worth it since God has given it. What do we do when wisdom fails? Well, I think there's a few just simple principles that we can take from the book of Ecclesiastes that helps us with this. And the first one is to see that while there's so much good in this world, it cannot be controlled. Whether we're going through a time of difficulty right now or this happens to be the best day of our lives, we will always butt into the reality that this is a broken world. And all the wisdom in the world, in a broken world, cannot equal guaranteed results. That's an equation that will never work out. But instead, if we recognize that there is a God who gives good things in the midst of it, that if our life, on the other hand, is just trying to get all of those good things that we can, we're going to miss the fact that that's not what we're here for. That's not where we're putting our hopes. That's not what it's in. That's not all that we're left to do. We're going to end up in the same place eventually as the preacher and just see, this didn't work. This wasn't it. Now what? Instead, second, it's to see that there is a good God who has given you these good things. And what I'm calling for here is not a right mentality. This isn't thinking happy thoughts in the midst of difficulty. That will never work out. That will never be sufficient for what we truly need. But instead, to see the reality that in the midst of a broken world, what God decides to do is step into it, is to act. And certainly, there's so many times that we could say, but what if he acted in a different way? What if he produced some different results? We can often hold God accountable, at least in our mind, to how come he didn't do something else that I wanted him to do? And most of the time, those are fair enough questions to ask. But I get worried that if that is where our mind goes to it, do we miss where the gift would be? Rather than hypothetically, what if God did this instead? How do we find the benefit, the joy, the goodness that is produced in our lives by seeing how he did choose to act? Knowing what the preacher says, it is a gift. And then finally, when wisdom fails, we recognize this world is not what we need or even want it to be, but God is. And so we fear him, we revere him, we cling to him. And ultimately, that could be our mindset. That could be what helps propel us through. Not even mindset. That could be our understanding of reality. That even as we're facing difficulty or vanity or things fail or wisdom doesn't seem to be working out or we don't even know what to do next, but we can recognize that this one who is above the sun will one day take all that we see, all that we experience, all that is broken in this world and will make it perfect yet again. This is how the book ends in Ecclesiastes 12. It says, the end of the matter. This is it. This is the summation. All has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. And this could be our perspective because this is reality. That what this author, what this preacher was looking for, this day when God would judge all that's broken, all that fails, all that doesn't produce, when he would hold it all accountable, this day that he was looking for has already been set in motion. And from the outside, what seems like the most vain thing to be ever done, the most meaningless, the most absurd thing that could possibly happen has already happened. That this God who is above the sun, this God who is above it all, chose to join in with this place of vanity. To join into this place, to take all that is broken, all that doesn't last, all that fails, and to make sense of it all. When Jesus does something that seems like it makes no sense, to join in with us, to make sense of this world. And so we trust not ultimately in the things that we taste or see or experience, but instead to see that we can delight in the midst of them because they're given to us by God, knowing that he has come and he is coming back, that will take all that is unsatisfying and will make it that so that that is never our experience ever again. I cannot do justice to this book in the short time that we have. It's such an incredible and unique book throughout the entire Bible that speaks so much to what is going on in our life that we can often look back and like, man, they don't know what it's like to have a calendar in your pocket. They don't know what it's like to have all these pressures of the modern world and to have this preacher say, man, there is nothing new under the sun. I went through the same thing. To do justice to it is so difficult, let alone to show the impact that it's been making on my life over the past month. Just that recognition of how easy it is to fall into the trap of this world. This striving for more of, I must be more, I must do more, there's more out there, I gotta acquire, I gotta get more, this is who I am, these are good things that are there, and so there's gotta be more to them. And it's not immune to that even when working in church ministry. To have the language so quickly go from, this is for you, God, to I am doing this for you, God, to I must do this for you. And find out that for some reason, I've been saying over and over in my mind, I must do this, I must do this, I must do this. The brokenness of this world is so insidious. It seeps into everything. So what we need is not right thinking or philosophy, but reality in the midst of that. Because we've been askew from what is real. And that is thrust upon us by this preacher. Man, this world is so out of control. It's so broken at times. It doesn't make sense. Why are these good things not working in the way that they ought to? And the preacher looks at us and says, yeah, that's about right. But in the midst of that, shows us the gift that is all around us, that this God steps into this world to act and will act ultimately in a way that points not to the things themselves, but to the one who gives us all that we need. What do we do when wisdom fails? Well, the only thing we possibly can do, turn to the one who gave us that wisdom. Turn to this one who has given us all that we have. Fear God and keep his commandments. That's the end of this book. We said fear is the beginning of wisdom, but it's not entirely that as well. It is, we are told, the whole duty of man and woman. Let me pray for us. Father, what a joy it is to come out to the Erie campus. It's so easy to just focus in on the narrow picture that you allow us to see of your work. And we can lose focus on the fact that you are so much bigger than we typically realize. You are so much more involved in this world than we can ever notice. And so to come and hear the work that you've been doing in the life of 4 people in this last service, 5 people in this service that I do not know, but you do. To see the work that's been going on in their life that I did not realize was happening, but you knew. To see a little glimpse of the fact that you are so much larger than my eyes could ever comprehend. And in the midst of that, to recognize I've been trying to fill my eyes with other things. I've been trying to find satisfaction and to sate longing and to find direction for life, to wrap my identity and purpose behind in some place other than the one who has given all that I have. As we live through this life, it's so easy to find ourselves down a road that we don't know how we got there. And yet we know that it is a road that you can find, you can locate, that you have not left us down, but you are always with us. Help us to turn to you and only you. See you that we pray.